Welcome to the Scottish Football Coaching Podcast, taking you around the country, shedding light on the work of the Scottish FA from grassroots to coach development, and taking a look at the future of our game.
In this episode, former Scotland international and current MK Dons manager Russell Martin sits down with your host Lewis Irons and the Scottish FA's head of coach education and development, Greg Patterson.
Greg, joining me as always, and we're fortunate today to be joined by Russell Martin. Russell, thank you very much for joining us on the podcast from what looks like a very sunny neck of the woods.
No problem, thanks for having me. It is sunny, but the wind's just started picking up, so might have to move inside at some point. But yeah, no, it's nice. Been lucky the last few days with the weather.
Yeah, of course, Greg. We've spoke to a number of guys over the past couple of weeks, and obviously we're in strange territory at the moment, but it's always good to keep connected and keep the coaching fraternity moving, as if you like.
Yeah, the strange territory, as you call it, Lewis, is a good opportunity for us to get people like Russell who maybe wouldn't have the time, given his current role at MK Dons and balancing different projects in his life. So no, it's good to try and get these guys on at this point in time and give something back, as you say.
Yeah, Russell, before we kind of get into things with yourself from your playing days and more importantly from coaching side of things, how have you found this at the moment personally and of course as manager at MK Dons? This must be a big challenge this moment that we're in.
Yeah, if I'm being completely honest, I was really anxious the first week or two to see, and I think it's just because we're in a business where we have so much structure and we have so much certainty about dates when we're playing, when we're training, what we're doing. And pretty much for 10 months of your life, everything's planned. 10, 11 months, everything's completely transparent, completely clear what you're doing, how you're doing it. And as Greg mentioned there as well, I've got a couple of other businesses outside of football, which I was concerned about, obviously, with the current climate and then being away from my players a lot and the staff there. So you feel a huge sense of responsibility for all of these people and different facets of my life. So the first couple of weeks I really struggled because it's you control the controllables, and it's one of the oldest sayings that I've always sort of had throughout my career, but there's so much of this that we can't control. So it was trying to escape all of that and forget all of that and just focus on what I can control, what I can influence. And since then, to be honest, I've tried to use it to my advantage in terms of career. The first 3 months, 4 months of the my managerial role, my first manager's job, it's been really hectic, really intense, and it's been a really good period for me to step away from it, have a look at what we've done. I've been putting all that sort of stuff together in terms of our training log. We film training all the time, our matches, so I've been looking at everything and trying to make the most of this period because it's not normal, and just try and prepare as best I can to improve for when we go back. So career-wise, it's probably been it's not ideal, of course, because you want to just keep working and keep. But to take a step back and actually look at it and tweak a few things and see what we've done well. So in terms of analysis and reflection, it's been incredible, really. I don't think we'll ever get another chance. Well, until I get sacked and I'm out of a job to then have a look and to get this time and to go through that. So yeah, first couple of weeks I struggled, and now it's been. You settle into a different routine, don't you? A new normal, if you like, at the moment. And the one silver lining from it all, it's been, and I spoke about this on the pro license with a lot of the guys, it's trying to strive for that balance between work and family, which is really important to me. And it's been really hard for the last 3 months. So this period to spend with my wife and kids, you know, every day, all day, and I have been working lots of it, but still just having breaks and play with the kids and stuff, it's been a real silver lining, really, to a really tricky and difficult situation.
Yeah, a great way to look at it, isn't it, Greg, to have that positive outlook on what is a difficult, challenging time. But I know that from speaking to you in your position, coach education, and obviously hearing Russell talk about it there, it's trying to turn it into a positive and a productive time to reflect, to analyse, but also to spend time with the people that matter.
Very much so. It sums it up, as you say, magnificently well. And it's interesting now, looking back on, I think, what are we now, almost a calendar month into when football stopped. And I think it is becoming, as Russell alluded to, the new norm now. And what you do during that period of time. You know, we've had guys here on that Russell's worked with Steve Salas before, who was on the podcast last week, and Donald McNaughton through the pro licence. And it's exactly what those guys talk about, you know, and those guys that are advising now to do is to, you know, to take that time to take stock, to reflect on what you have, to reflect on how you I suppose you need to try and improve and move things forward. And you know what? Get that time with your family that you don't normally get. And, you know, football is an all-encompassing business when you're involved in it. You know, it really is. It occupies your thoughts 24/7. So to get that little bit of time where you can spend with family is crucial, I think, particularly during these times. Yeah. Yeah.
Greg touched on it there, Russell, when we spoke to likes of Donald McNaughton and Steve Salas. Now, it's interesting when we speak to former players and coaches and stuff like that, but those guys talk a lot about the mindset behind football. So it's fascinating to hear from someone like yourself who's played the game, managing in it just now, just how important that mindset and keeping that mindset is.
And I don't know if everyone would agree, but for me, it's the most important bit. There is so little that separates so many professional players and even players who are outside of the professional game. We've all played with players who we would have said years ago they were miles better than me. Or that player you play with at 18, 19 and go, what a talent, and they never made it. And there's one reason for that, and it's their mental capacity, their resilience, their ability to deal with so-called pressure, stresses of what is an absolutely brutally ruthless industry. You know, that's a fact. So, and it's funny you mentioned Steve there. Last week I got Steve. I've worked with Steve over the years, and he's for me he's someone who's always challenged what I think about leadership, about management. And he's a friend of mine, and I introduced him to Greg a while ago because I thought it'd be really beneficial for some people just to get. He's a completely different lens on it because he's been through the education system and then he's worked in football as well. So he thinks differently to a lot of people. We surround ourselves with people who we play with, who we've been coached by, and there tends to be a lot of the same similar thinking. So guys like that. So I got him to do a Zoom call with all of our players last week. It was optional. Fortunately, all of our players took it up. It was brilliant. They loved it. A few have been in touch with him about routine during this period. A few are struggling how to stay motivated because, as we said, there's no certainty in when we're going to get back playing football. And these are young lads, some of them living at home alone at 21 years old, away from their family, isolating in these situations. It's not normal, it's difficult. So we've done that once a week. We had Steve last week, we had someone else this week, and it went really well. Donald, I had my one-to-one with him actually, Greg, on last week about the personality personality profiling that we've done on the pro license, which was fascinating. I find Donald one of the most fascinating and insightful people I've worked with. Or had the pleasure to listen to him whenever he just talks on the pro license. I find him captivating. I think he's such an interesting person, and finding out more about him and his journey and where he's come from is incredible, which I didn't know. And having that, it is, isn't it? It's an amazing story.
He's got some bizarre stories from things going by. Yeah, absolutely.
I know, yeah. So he's another person I'm going to speak to our players. Because you're right, it's so important to stay connected. It's so important, and mentally more than anything. They can stay physically fit. That is what they do. They know how to do that. But the mental side of it is huge. And I worked with someone really on in my career who challenged me. He said, attitude is 80%. Ability is only 20%. And I argued for about 2 years, religiously, every week with him about that. And then it got to the end and I was like, do you know what? It might even be more than that. It might actually be 19-10, and that's how strongly I feel about it. So we do a lot of stuff on it at MK. We try and do one meeting a week at least on mindset, mentality, and trying to get the players to realise they're in control. They're in control of how they feel about situations. They're in control of how they're not always in control of how they perform because there's so many variables, but they're in control about how they react to it, how they prepare for it, how they then analyse it and learn from it. And we try and get loads of that in. And it's something I'm really keen on. It's probably been a bit different for quite a few of the lads who probably haven't had it before. And I was a bit nervous about how it would be received in terms of the meetings we do on it and stuff like that. I mean, they've been brilliant and they've really taken ownership of it. And in terms of like core values stuff, they want to be known for and they want to live by. So you know, that's a really long answer to your question. So in short, answer is mentality is huge, and for me, it's the biggest part, and it's what separates the best players in the world from the ones who don't quite reach where they should. It maximises people's potential 100%.
Well, a podcast is definitely the place to give the long answers, Russell. We're great to hear from you in so much depth, but let's get on into it now. When we look back, and we'll go back to your early playing days, growing up in Brighton. What are your earliest kind of memories from learning from coaches at a young age, whether that be the academy or where?
So I never played academy football. until I was 16. Never. So it was always like the rep squads, like Brighton Schools and stuff like that. I never made it into my county team, which is still a bone of contention for me now. Still hurts, but it's the earliest one was probably my old man, my dad. To be honest, he coached my brother's team, and my older brother was a really good player. He was at Watford as a kid for a long, long time, and a lot of clubs looked after him. But again, mentality wasn't quite there to do it, and so. But if I look back at it now, a lot of the stuff I was taught or coached was really stuff that wouldn't probably be read, like, in terms of, he used to drop me at place and say, right, you've got to run home. You've got to run home and I'll see you back. You've got 15 minutes to get there. And I look back at it now, it's something I'd never do with my kids, ever. But he dropped me and my little brother off and we'd have to run home and my little brother would be moaning. But it gave me a really good grounding in terms of, not in terms of football. That was always stuff that I just had intrinsically motivated to practice. So I'd go out the park, I'd, against the wall in the school behind my house, and right foot, left foot, do all this stuff. And I had a little brother, 18 months age gap, who we would just play football the whole time. So in the garden, competitive, 2-3 hours at a time in the street with our mates, which probably doesn't happen very often now. But if I look back at all the coaches, none of them actually coached technique. I didn't really get coached any technique, any sort of game understanding. That all had to come from myself, from playing with my mates, from playing in my Sunday league team, my junior team, from playing at school. And one of the best ones was probably a rugby coach, a rugby teacher, a PE teacher, Mr. Taylor, I'm still in touch with now. He was brilliant in terms of his understanding of sport and what it took, and he'd make you find space and stuff like that. All this stuff that was rugby. He was the head of PE and he was a mad rugby guy, and you had to play rugby to play football. But it was all stuff that really made sense to me when I stepped on a football pitch as well. And it's the first time I probably had to think about, do you know what he's taught me in that rugby session, that actually applies here as well. So, but until the first time I probably got coached was probably when I went to Charlton at 16. Yeah. And I spent a year there and got released and was devastated. And then and that was it, really. I dropped back in to non-league. I had a 3-month period with Brighton as well. Worked with Dean Wilkins, who was an outstanding coach, I thought. But that was a really difficult period for me. I was going through my parents splitting up and stuff. So I only spent 3 months there and really didn't enjoy it. In my hometown club, and I thought I was going to love it. And I took the decision to step out and go back to college and just play non-league football for a bit, because they weren't getting the best of me and I certainly wasn't getting the best of them. So, but as a coach, he was excellent. And then, yeah, just went back to non-league football and sort of, you get coached in a different way and you get kicked by men on a Saturday, and you have to find other ways of learning to evade that and to deal with the lack of physicality that I had at that time. So, I didn't really properly get coached, I'd say, until I was 18 and went to Wickham and with Tony Adams, Gary Smith in the youth team initially, who's doing really well in the MLS now. But and then it was Tony Adams who got elevated to the first team really quickly. And he coached me in a way I've never been coached, and it was mostly out of possession. So it was 1v1 defending. It was making sure he tracked runners, trying to sense where a second ball would arrive. So all stuff that was really relevant to the league we were playing in. And I really enjoyed it with Tony. I think the only thing was for him, and I've spoken to him about it since, he just had a lack of knowledge at that level. He played 20 years in the Premier League and been one of the world's best centre-halves. And he struggled to deal with players that were nowhere near capable of what he was, and he thought it probably most professional footballers should be able to do certain things that actually they're not a given. They have to actually really be coached and be taught that, even at a first team level in League Two. So, and then from there, I've been lucky, really lucky, to work with some really good coaches.
Yeah, absolutely. And Greg, I want to just go to you on that point, because when we've done all these podcasts, however many we've recorded with, that's not really an area we've gone into, when a lot of the time people are learning probably from their old man at an early age, aren't they? And that came in from God, tiny height and just the early days of football.
I think Russell's mentioned he's on the pro license just now, and I think we do exercises on the pro license with the likes of a Don McNaughton, and we try and take people back to that journey. And a lot of people do reflect back on, like, if you ask the majority of people, and certainly my experience, if you ask the majority of the people who their first hero in the game was, more often than not, it's their dad, or perhaps it's even their uncle or something like that. It's not the first coach. It's not generally what most people would expect it to be. It's not that first coach that you score 20 goals from, or you get player of the season with, or whatever. It's more often than not, it's the dad taking them along, playing with them in the back garden or whatever the case may be. And it's that I suppose it's that first influence on the game that then stands them in good stead and I suppose gives them the love for the game, gives them the love and the appetite for the game that then forges that hopeful career for the rest of their days.
And then Russell, you touched on it. You know, the career that you went on to have once you kind of finished up on that point, you worked with some top managers and people listening will obviously, Scotland fans will be listening, they'll know about your international career, your time up here with Rangers, but that spell particularly with...
I hope not.
that spell with Norwich is probably what the majority will think about your career as, and obviously working under managers like Paul Lambert, Chris Hughton, Alex Neil, some top managers, particularly at Norwich alone, that you work with.
Yeah, as I said, and people always say to me, who's your biggest influence in terms of who do you want to be like? But you take bits from everyone. You take stuff that you really like, and then you learn a lot of stuff that you don't want to do as well. And I knew from a really early age that I wanted to be a manager when I was done. That was probably the journey I went on when I started playing football. It was like 21, 22, and I really thought about the game. I'd write stuff down, training sessions. I'd always question why we were doing stuff, which was probably a pain in the bum for some managers. I was really interested in like the tactical side, the leadership side, and how to motivate people. And I was a captain at a really early age at Peterborough, and that was with another Scottish manager, Darren Ferguson. So I worked with John Gorman, then Paul Lambert, who were really contrasting in terms of personality, completely different. The way they managed was completely different. And then I went to another Scotsman in Darren Peterborough, who I loved working with. He was so intense. Similar to Paul, and that was probably the kind of manager that got the best out of me through my career. If I look at it now and I go, you know, Paul Lambert, Darren Ferguson, Alex Neil, probably the best in terms of what they got out of me, the best performance-wise throughout my career. And I played for Paul for 6 years, but they were really intense and I never quite knew where I stood with any of them. You never knew when you were doing brilliantly and I always felt like I needed to rise to something. But at the same time, I felt really close to all of them. I was captain for all of them at various stages for most of them, so I had a really good relationship, but it was always that distance. And it's interesting because that's what got the best out of me. But when I look at how I want to manage, I want to be a lot more close with my players, because it suits my personality better. But when I look back on it, they were brilliant. They were all different in their own ways. You know, Darren, I'd been at Wickham and played a lot of games, and sort of that's where I say I became a man and became a professional. Really, it's where I learned how to become professional, prepare properly. Deal with the rigours of professional football day in, day out, the intensity, and then with Paul and John at first. And then Darren just took it to another level in terms of how confident he was in what he was doing. It was incredible at that stage. And we had a good side at Peter, and he was like, no, we're not going to change for anyone, any opposition. This is how we're going to do it. And everyone just bought into it. And when I look back, it was quite unique. The dressing room we had, it was young, it was hungry. They recruited brilliantly. And I was just sad he left, and I left really soon after because I wasn't really interested in being there if it wasn't playing for him. So, and then I went to Norwich, obviously, back with Paul. So I was really pleased to go back, and we had an unbelievable journey from League One to the Premier League in 2 years, and then stayed there. And then he came to an end. And then I probably took for granted at the time, you just think it's the norm because I'd worked for him before. And then we had this dressing room at Norwich that I walked into. It's a huge club and it was underachieving. It was struggling. It was close to administration. And Paul just, through sheer single-mindedness and what new clarity in what he wanted and just complete confidence in what he was doing, he just went, we'll just drag this club and we'll be the ones to sort of take it through. And everyone, again, I look back at it, recruited so well. And it was all about character, regardless of ability, and that's what they all based it on. And then I went to Chris Hughton, who was complete opposite to Paul. So, and that's what the club struggled with. Chris is, I really like him, he's a great guy and he's a top manager, he's so organised and so structured. But it was a completely different playing philosophy to Paul. And we had a group of players that were recruited for Paul's style. Mentality-wise, completely believed in it. And we were quite gung-ho. We were just against anyone, whether it was Man City away or, you know, West Brom at home. We played the same way. We pressed and we tried to play out. And we went back from that to then Chris going, nope, we're going to go away. We're going to get two banks of four. We're going to be solid. We're going to be really organised. And when I look back at it, I learned so much from Chris in terms of his structure, his organisation, how much detail he gave the players out of possession, stuff like that. It was so important. And if you blended the two, we had have probably been perfect. We ended up getting relegated. We stayed up the first season, then relegated the season after, because I just think the lads felt it was just so much change really quickly. And the squad changed hugely as well in terms of recruitment and character. And then, but yeah, really fortunate. And then come across Gordon with Scotland, who is brilliant. And just his level of detail. The first year, I didn't really play much. And then he put me in against Croatia. And he rung me and said, "You want a chance to play centre-half? I'm giving you one." I was on the golf course at the time. It was in the off-season, and I was like, all right, so I'm playing. And he stuck by his word and then stuck with me. And I really, really enjoyed playing for Gordon. And as you, and Alex Neil, and all, you know, I feel bad leaving people out, but even yeah. Alex now, what he's doing at Preston, it doesn't surprise me. He came in with, for a 33-year-old to come in from Hamilton to Norwich, a lot of people questioned it. Even the players in the dressing room, I'll be honest, but he came in from his first meeting. It was bam, this is what we're doing. It's black and white. If you don't do it, you won't play. If you do it, I'll give you everything. I'll back you. I mean, he was incredible, really. He's, from what the journey he'd been on, for how, you know, he'd only been a manager a short space of time. And I really enjoyed it. And he's probably the most brutally honest person I've ever come across, which at times as a captain was brilliant when we'd have one-on-ones. But there was also spent a lot of time trying to balance that, because there's some people who can take that honesty and there's some people who can't, and I really learned that. And I think honesty is so important, but the way you deliver it is probably even more important than that. But I loved that fact about him, that he was just so straight, and this is how we're doing it, and I'm going to be honest, if you haven't been good enough, I'm going to tell you. So yeah, different managers, different personalities, different ways of leading, and as I said, I took a bit from every single one.
Yeah, and that's ultimately the goal, isn't it, Greg, when we talk about that, and Russell now going into a coaching capacity, learning from guys like that, all different bits that you can take from the different styles they had, whether that be their personalities, their playing style, that's going to stand someone like Russell in great stead moving into the coaching world.
Certainly sounds that way, doesn't it? And it's incredible listening to him and saying that the two managers that probably got the most from him, and the reasons why they get the most from him, is decided, I can't do that myself because I don't have that in my gift. So I've decided not to do it that way, which is incredible to you know, to have that kind of foresight and to look at it that deeply and think, no, I just don't have it in my gift. Therefore, I can't deal with my players that way. So I need to you know, approach it from a different angle. So incredible experience that he's talking about, all those different guys, as he says, and taking different things.
Yeah. That's something we spoke about quite a lot on the pro license, isn't it, Greg? Yeah. About being authentic and being yourself and authentic leadership. And if I look at, and it's probably been a bit different for me because I've come out of the dressing room and I've played with all the guys I'm now managing. So it make that relationship is already built. It's already there. So, but if I look at it, and there's been sort of, if I look at it now, I want to be warm because that's how I want to be. I want to have a relationship with the boys, and we do a lot. I speak to them a lot. We have a lot of communication, but it's being firm with it as well. And the firmness is the stuff that I got off. And that comes from being really, really honest. And as I said, the managers who I always felt got the best out of me is because they were completely honest. So you knew where if you didn't play well, you were getting told. And it was like, but that honesty always made you feel not on edge, but it was always a challenge because you wanted praise. And praise wasn't easily earned at all. You had to really earn it to be praised. Now, I remember one day with Paul Lambert on the training ground, I thought I played really well. We'd won 2-0 at Scunthorpe. And he came up to me and I thought, he's going to give me some praise. And he came up and went, "You only made one tackle Saturday." I went, "All right, yeah, okay." He went, "Yeah, we need to have a look at that." And just walked off. And I thought, oh my God, I remember being on my toes. And he had that effect on everyone. I thought, I've just set up a goal. We've just won away from home. He'd be pleased. But he was a hard man to please.
Yeah.
Fascinating to think, and I know I was going to say, Russell, when you brought up that style of play initially under Paul, where you were gung ho, I thought you might get a Man City reference in when considering you scored a double against him in a game at one point.
That was actually under Chris, so yeah, that was Chris. Yeah, he was having kittens. I was out throughout the pitch, I think. So yeah, it's interesting because the style of play one is I never minded as long as there was clarity in what we're doing. It's not like I really. There's times I really enjoy my football more than others because I wanted to pass, I wanted to play football, I wanted to, and I wanted us to have most of the possession. And fortunately for me, most of the teams end up playing and did having most of the possession. But my sort of belief in style of play and philosophy, whatever you want to call it, has never changed, which is which is interesting because I believe in a way of it being played. And if anything, I've just kind of, it's been reinforced to me throughout my career. The difference in terms of culture and stuff like that, I've learned loads of bits. And there's bits at the start of my coaching journey, I thought I'm 100% going to do that. And now I look at it and go, no chance would I try and do that because of character and stuff like that. But playing philosophy, and it's something we tried to bring in really quickly at MK, and had this debate on the pro license with a few of the guys actually about what comes first. Is it your style of play, or do you just need to find a way to win when you take over a job? And that they go together. But for me, it's I've got a belief in something, and for the lads to believe in something, they have to. It comes from the leadership, so I have to really believe in what I'm doing. And if I look back towards the end of my playing career, there was a couple of moments I just didn't believe in what I was doing, and I never got the best out of myself. And I look back and I think, oh, maybe I should have been a bit more flexible. But I've got a real belief in how I want it done. And unfortunately, the guys are buying into it at MK at the moment, which is great. But that debate about trying to win first, and I'll be honest, we've tried to implement a style of play straight away from day one. I lost my first four games as a manager. But fortunately for me, I had a chairman who was saying, I want a certain style of play. This is what the club has been known for. And he wants an identity, and he wants something that's sustainable. And so he was quite patient with it. And we've still got loads of work to do on it. But the fact that me and the coaching staff believe 100% in it. And I think if you've got something to base yourself on, whether it's being really organised and defending really well, or whether it's being gung-ho like a word for, I say gung-ho, but we were drilled. We were organising how we played, and energy and intensity. And intensity was probably the biggest word. But as long as you work on something, whatever it is, otherwise you go game to game changing things. You go day to day changing things based on emotion, based on results. And I always found that really difficult as a player when it was, if we lost, we knew what was coming the next week. It wasn't going to be nice. It wasn't going to be good. We're going to work on the horrible stuff. And then if we won, it was like, oh, we can forget that. We can have five sides now. So I think it's got to be a structure to something. And I really believe in that. And whatever it is, and we've just chose that it's actually going to be trying to control a game of football and controlling it with possession and trying to do it that way.
Yeah. It's fascinating to hear, Russell, about the time at MK Dons, of course, firstly arriving there as a player. And obviously that spell was a memorable one for you guys, I'm sure, clinching the most ways. But then to so quickly go into the managerial world, how did you adapt to that? What was that like for you?
It's been chaos. In the first few weeks, it was. I didn't see it coming. If I'd, fortunately for me, I've done the A license, obviously with the SFA, and I've done the pro license. I've done the LMA. I'm on the pro license. I've done the LMA diploma in football management in between. And all of that time I've used to write stuff down. I've been planning. So I wrote down a 90-day plan. If I ever got a job, I've written down a 90-day plan of the stuff I want to work on. And that included a pre-season, but obviously I haven't had a pre-season, which would have been lovely. But so that was something I did. And it was something we were encouraged to do on the A license. So I did that in 2016, I think. It was like, get a plan. How would you structure your week? How would you structure a pre-season? How would you deal with a Saturday, Tuesday game? So all of that stuff I had, and it's stuff I've been working on the computer in the evenings, in the afternoon or whatever. As a player, I get loads of spare time, and at MK I was travelling and staying up, so I had loads of time to do that stuff. So fortunately I had an idea of how I wanted to structure things and stuff like that. I didn't expect the job to come, and as I said, I went to Walsall before I went to MK Dons as a player coach, and I thought I'd end up doing a lot of coaching, and it was kind of the reason I went there, because I knew the manager, I played with him, but I ended up just playing really. I didn't have anywhere near enough impact as what I wanted to off the pitch, and I didn't enjoy it, and I left quite quickly, which is not like me, and I don't like giving up, but it just didn't feel right. It didn't feel right for me, and then MK come along and sort of it fitted really well, the way the manager wanted to do things, and Paul Tisdale was really good, really different, really articulate, really clever guy. The way he thought about the game, like really conceptual, not just tactics and rigid, you need to be here. It was really different, and I was really interested in that, and I'm glad I went and paid for him. It was great. We got promoted last year, really enjoyed it. Unfortunately for him, obviously the chairman decided to change, and then obviously, fortunately for me, it was, and as I said, it was unexpected, but he offered me the job, and it was because he spoke to everyone at the club. He said to me, I spoke to everyone in terms of the staff, and we were on a really bad run, and they all want you to have a crack at it. They all think you're ready, because obviously a lot of the time I'd be on the bus doing this coaching work, typing stuff in. The lads calling me a complete geek. But then after a while, they start asking you out what you're doing, how you're doing it and stuff like that. So fortunately for me, it was me that got the job. And he said, you know, do you feel ready? Do you want to take it? And I said, yes, straight away. Because one, those opportunities don't come around very often. And the first person I rung Paul straight away and said, look, I'm really sorry you've gone, but I've been offered the job and I want to take it. And he was brilliant about it. He was superb. But yeah, one, it was the opportunity is massive. It's a great football club. And the other one was, I did feel ready. I felt prepared because I'd done, you know, I took my level 2 and B license and stuff years ago whilst I was playing. I think I'd done my B license 25, 26, and then A license when I was 30. So I felt prepared, not ready, because I don't think anything could get you ready for being thrust into the world of management that quickly. But I felt as prepared as I needed to be, and I had a real idea of how I wanted to do it. It's not something that's just gone, oh, right, yeah, I'm going to be a manager now. I'd had all this stuff written down, and then it was about, for me, it's been about trying to implement everything I've written down and trying to stay true to that and stick to that, because there's a reason I've written all that down over a number of years. It's because I've learned and I've acquired that, and it's how I want to do it. So I'm really keen to not let the pressure or the stress of the situation, we're in the bottom four, to try and alter that. And I did, and I went straight away just purely for structure and some small wins and loads of cultural changes, not just on the pitch, but loads of stuff in and around it and off the pitch. And I'm really enjoying it. I hope the players are enjoying it. I think they are, and the staff are really buying into it. And I think we're changing what we're doing day in, day out, and trying to improve things, and hopefully that'll continue.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing getting that first managerial job, but it's another thing doing it in the manner that Russell has in the middle of a campaign and having that time to, well, most football managers don't really have time, as Russell said. You know, you have to find a balance as a coach between, is it a way of getting wins initially, or is it your style of play? And that is a challenge for coaches, Greg.
He's saying he's been thinking about it, though, since it was 2021. You know, he said he didn't see the job coming necessarily, but at the same time, you know, he's chatting about how he's prepared himself since that kind of young age, and talking about his coach education experiences and things there. And you know, there's not many current professional players that will phone me on my way home when I'm in the car one day and say, do you know what, mate, I'm really enjoying these assignments. You know, and that was a conversation that I had with Russell one time, because Russell's A-licence, I'm sure he doesn't mind me saying, but his A-licence journey was a little bit different. I think he missed obviously some dates because of international duty and different things, and you know, so we defined some clever ways for him to make up time. And so it was through these assignments that he's chatting about, and he phoned up one day, do you know what, I'm really enjoying doing this. You know, so that's obviously helped him, and it just goes to show, you know, and Russell spoke about that throughout everything he said. You know, if you kind of get back hopefully what you put in, and he's put in a lot of time and effort to those assignments and to those thoughts and writing down notes and sitting in buses all those years, that hopefully now when he's got that role, as he says, it doesn't prepare him fully, but it'll always give him a decent grounding, hopefully, and something to fall back on to hopefully now kick on with MK Dons and again in the future.
You spoke at the start of this, Russell, and you were speaking so positively about, you know, this shutdown that we're in, and of course it's presented its challenges. I'm sure as a manager it presents a frustration, a sense of, you talked about that hunger of being working with the boys, and you're doing a lot that you can in this sort of instance to keep the boys ticking over and provide them with stuff, but you must just be desperate to get back to things.
Yeah, I think everyone I've spoke to in football is like, yeah, it's been a nice break, but everyone just wants to get back to some sense of normality. And for me, it's the thing I miss most, you know, not the match days and all that. It's just the connection with people. It's just that interaction with people on a daily basis. And as a manager, it was probably the one thing I wasn't quite ready for was the amount of time that is demanded of you on a day-to-day basis. So, like, just constant conversation. And it's something I really enjoy. But by the end of the day, you're whacked. And then someone else comes in. And I'm really conscious that the last person that comes in my office gets the same energy as the first person. Yeah. So even if you're feeling tired, and you have to sort of drag yourself out of that and bring yourself to a certain state to deal with everything. And it's just little bits. It's stuff that you get asked about. Oh, is this, do you want to change this at the hotel, this meal, and on Friday? This is the, and it's like, man, you're the sports scientist. You do what you want to do. Like, you know, delegate. It's trying to delegate, but at the same time being on top of everything. It's been really interesting, and that's the stuff I miss, the conversation with staff and the interaction with players and just that connection, really. And I'm not, I'm fine with structure. I'm big on routine, and I've found a routine during this, because you equip yourself with tools over a number of years, and I have a lot of mentors I can speak to. I have a lot of coaches and people outside of that, psychology and stuff like that, I can speak to, and that's been great. But yeah, it's that day to day interaction with people that you miss the most, I think.
Yeah, and you spoke about all those things that you have to then take on as a manager, all those responsibilities, and it's not just management that's a responsibility. You spoke about the other work you're doing and the businesses you've got, and then of course the pro license that you're still going through as well at the moment. You've got a lot of on your plate that I'm sure you have to find that time for them, and that's why routine must be so important.
Yeah, it's huge. Yeah, for me, so like I get up early most mornings, the first thing I do is go and exercise. Yeah. Because it sets me up. It sets me up for the day. So I was on a bike ride at 6:30 this morning, and it's not for everyone. I'm not saying, but that's just how I operate. I can't work late into the night, because by 8-9 o'clock I'm no good to anyone. So that I'm most productive in the morning. So I try and do that. Come back, get some work done, and then after that, I'm with the kids and the family. So, and I've tried to say that to some of our players who are sort of getting up at. Their routine's gone from being ready at training at 10 o'clock and now they're sleeping until midday, 1 o'clock, and then trying to get motivated to exercise and then staying up till 2 in the morning on the computer or whatever. And it's just, for me, routine's so important. And it sounds boring and it sounds mundane, but unfortunately, as an athlete or someone in the job that you're in, I've every single book I've read on, and I read a lot, I'm a geek, too much probably, but every single book I've read on successful people, development, self-development, stuff like that, it's routine, it's habit, it's good habits, it's creating good habits. And so it's something that I think is so important, especially during this period. It's something Steve spoke about last week, Steve Salas, on the webinar with the guys. He said that, you know, the stuff that you can do to really help you through this period, the first thing is get a routine. And whatever that is, whether it's waking up at 10 o'clock, eating breakfast, chilling out for an hour and going through social media, you just put it into a routine, because it's vital.
Yeah. It's a valuable lesson, isn't it, Greg? Not just for aspiring coaches listening in, or even experienced coaches listening in, but just anybody listening in, going through what we're going through at the moment, is that's something to take on board.
I think it is, and I think we're about to reach a period of time as well where the UK government will need to come out and tell us, I suppose, what's happening next. I think, did they not say, was it not about Easter Monday? I think they're due to come out and say, you know, that's after the 3 weeks of the initial kind of lockdown. And you know, it's probably a nice time right now to reflect on that. You know, what if I think back to Donald McNaughton again, you know, what have you done well during that period of lockdown? Yeah. What have you found tricky, and how might you improve, you know, going forward as well? So you're right, I think, as Russell suggests, it's not just about, you know, that background he's got as an athlete, as a professional footballer. It's about being a better person, or as good a person as you possibly can be during these tough times.
Yeah, and if you were to apply that, Russ, I know you both spoke about the routine and the manner that you're getting it to, but when you come out the other side of this spell and you get back into things, are there key things that you can take away from this that you're going through at the moment that you think will have an impact on you as a coach?
I think it's reinforced a lot of things that I'm doing. There's stuff that I look at now on videos and things. We film all the meetings and stuff like that. There's stuff I want to change. There's stuff I want to tweak. But I'm also conscious the game's not going to be the same when we go back. There's going to be... I do believe this will change the game in some way. I don't know whether it's going to be positive. I don't know if it's going to be negative. I really hope clubs survive. But I do think it's going to change the world. Business, you know, everything's been impacted by this. So it has to... What is the new normal going to be in football? And at the minute, I'm looking into that. I need to be as prepared as I possibly can for that, because I don't know what it's going to look like, whether that's we can't sign a player next year, whether it's I just don't know. So whether it's we're definitely going to finish this season or we're not, I don't know. So I'm trying to every time we get an update, just kind of plan for that. So at the minute, we've been told we're going to be back on May the 16th and we'll have 4 weeks to prepare for the first game. So my last 2 days has been spent, well, yesterday and today, planning a 4 week pre-season, basically, with the sports science. So we spent 2 hours on a Zoom call yesterday about what we want it to look like, how we're going to periodise the training, when we're going to get a pre-season game in, if you like. So that's now my focus, and that might change again in 2 weeks. It might change on Monday, like Greg said, when we get told something else, but all I can do is prepare for what I get told and when we get told and control that until then, I'm just really intrigued and really interested in how it's going to affect the game and how it's going to affect the club. Constant communication with the chairman. I spoke to him at length today again, and he worries, you know, that it's going to really impact us in terms of budget. It's going to impact us in terms of staff and things like that. And so my job is to try and protect as many people as I possibly can at the football club, but at the same time, be pragmatic and realistic and what I might have to deal with this season and definitely next season.
Well, one thing's for sure, Greg, you can't prepare coaches for something like this on a coaching course, can you? Really, we're all going through something that we're just never been through before and hopefully we'll never go through again. So it's about adaptability and being able to keep a positive mindset, like Russell clearly is as well, but also taking it one step at a time and adapting and being prepared.
Taking it one step at a time. And I think Russell kind of spoke about it earlier. It's for me as well, it's that loss of community. And you see the kind of football fraternity coming together, players challenging themselves and or each other on social media, and you know, staff at clubs volunteering to give out dinners or lunches or even with the NHS and all those different things. There is a real community spirit, I think, within the football world. And you know, the Saturday at 3 o'clock or whenever the games happen these days has been taken away from us all for a period of time that we just don't know how long that'll be. You know, even I look at my two boys down the stairs just now, and I think, you know, just they've just lost that Wednesday and Thursday nights they had just now to play with their pals. You know, it's just, as I say, it's just that loss of community at this point in time. And but I hope Russell's right, and you know, I hope, you know, people do reflect on that the same way we're maybe talking about it, and Russell's obviously reflecting on it, and you know, we do come out it better. You know, you hope people, you know, are using the time hopefully wisely. And but again, we just don't know what it's going to look like. There's going to be some tough calls will need to be made. You know, yesterday we learned as well that Scottish football won't return until the 10th of June. So you know, you just wonder where it's all going to end. But hopefully that people are ready and prepared and as best they possibly can be to kick things on when it all does start again.
Interesting, Russell, at the start of all this when you were talking about some of the managers that got the best out of you as a player and as a person were the ones that treated you in that certain way. And ultimately, at times like this, but not just times like this in general, you're dealing with people at the end of the day as a manager. How have you found that side of things in terms of, do you look at players and constantly relate back to what you were thinking at that stage of your career? Do you take that into a management side of things?
Yeah, I think I try to. And you try to... You try and put yourself in their shoes, or as Steve would say, you look at it through their lens. Because what I've found really quickly in this job is that when I'm having conversation with people, I need to explain why I feel things or why I see things in a certain way, because they might not see it the same way as me. It might not be as clear. And it's the biggest thing I've taken in my first 3 months is that when I'm being honest with people, I have to go into detail about why I see things a certain way. And there's guys now who I'm speaking to. I've spoke to most of the players on the phone once a week or at least a text. There's some who socially aren't comfortable talking to their manager on the phone. I can sense that on the phone. They don't feel entirely comfortable. So they might be the ones that you just send a text to, or I'll ring the assistant manager and say, can you check in with him? Just see how he is, you know? And what happens is I'm really conscious that I don't want to gravitate towards the people that mentally are similar to me, that how I was when I played, because that's the easiest and it's the simplest. It's a trick you can fall into really easily, that you only end up dealing with the people who sort of have the same mindset as you and approach the same thing. So I've been really conscious to try and approach the other people that I wasn't that close to in the dressing room that are really different from me, and trying to explain things and why I want certain things and how they're feeling. And so it is the people, the most important bit. It's about connection. It's about people. It's about, and any leadership, whether it's in football, and I really believe that in business. I've done loads of study visits into business over the years, the last 3-4 years in particular, with some really good leaders, and it's all about people and how they treat them. And as I said, that's what makes this period the most difficult, because I can't see them face to face. And doing it over here is the next best thing. It's brilliant, but it's not the same as that human interaction. You don't see the little nuances. They don't see the body language, the movement, in if they're feeling uncomfortable, if they're feeling comfortable. And it's different. But I do believe this will happen a lot more in the future. This whether it's webinars, people coming and talking over the big screen to people instead of being face to face. So it's something, it's a reality I think we all have to get a little bit more used to.
Yeah, it's a funny one, just exactly what you're talking there, Russell, isn't it? You know, if I was to come into your manager's office, you're right, it's not the same. I've immediately got a laptop in front of me, you've immediately got a laptop in front of you. So there's those two barriers we've got immediately between us, whereas if I'm in your office, there's nothing between us. So
no, exactly.
The conversation's different straight away.
Exactly. And I've found that talking to a few of the guys this week, some of them, they prefer this because it's easier for them. They don't, you know, and some of them really don't like it. So I much prefer face-to-face, but there are people who would feel much more comfortable doing this, which is why I think this is something we have to probably get used to in a lot of areas.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, of course, Russell, you know, on the pro license at the moment, Greg, and obviously things don't really stop in terms of a coaching side of things. We have to try and make stuff like this work as much as possible. And there's a lot still going on in the pro license and all the coaching courses at the moment, isn't there?
We're still doing a lot of the coaching courses. We've spent kind of 3 weeks, I suppose, redeveloping our level one courses to try and get them online and using Zoom capabilities and different things, Lewis. Yeah, but the pro license is one we'll now need to look at for likes of Russell and all his peers and his colleagues as well on that course. We lost a trip, unfortunately, to UEFA. The first week in May, we're meant to go over to the UEFA headquarters there and spend a week with them. So that's now gone. So we'll obviously, myself, Malky, Andy and Scott Gemmell, will now need to have a look and see what else can we maybe do. And as Russell says, this might be the norm now for the duration of the pro licence, certainly for the next couple of months anyway, is try to replicate what we might have done in person now over this kind of platform.
Yeah. First and foremost, though, Russell, on a personal level, you, the family, everybody doing okay through all of this?
Yeah, I think so, yes. Homeschooling's not that easy, but again, it was just trying to find a routine that worked for us, really, as a family, and not being too not trying to get too stressed out about it. The first week we tried to be a bit militant and this is the times we're working, but it just didn't work for us. So we've had to be flexible, we've had to be adaptable, but they're all healthy, they're all happy. You know, people dealing with different things. My mum's in isolation because she's really vulnerable. So she's 12 weeks. So no one, we have to drop her shopping off at the door and stuff like that. And that's the stuff that really, you know, it hits home that there's more important stuff at stake here. But I think it's the same with what Greg said there. Football brings identity to so many people, community, it brings friendship, it's tribal, isn't it? It's what brings so many people together, and of the least important things in life, it is the most important. There's no doubt about it to all of us, you know. It's what we grow up with, it's the environment we grow up in. And even my boy, they're doing, his coach is brilliant, under eights, they do Zoom sessions, training sessions on Facebook Live, so they're all interacting and speaking once a week. When training should be, they're doing a Zoom. The kids, I don't know what they talk about. I don't mean they talk about much, but it's just seeing their friends on the camera. It makes such a difference to them. So they're doing fine. Yeah, they're doing fine. Just got, obviously, you're concerned for people. I had to drop, that's why I was a bit late for this call, dropping some stuff off to my nan and trying to just make sure that they're okay. And but fortunately for us, the family all right at the moment.
That's all we have time for in this week's edition of the Scottish Football Coaching Podcast. Feel free to send us your feedback, your ideas for coaching topics you want us to cover, and to get in touch, visit @ScottishFA on Twitter or email info@scottishfa.co.uk.